Did you know we have completely ad-free early access to all of our episodes? Well, we do. Not only that, but we have dozens of bonus episodes waiting for you. Head on over to patreon.com/ghosttownpod, and you can check it out for 7 days absolutely free. That's patreon.com/ghosttownpod.
As we wrap up 2025, one thing's clear. Uncertainty isn't temporary. It's the world we live in now. Noble Gold Investments helps Americans protect what they've built with real gold and silver, holding value when everything else feels uncertain. Visit NobleGoldInvestments.com and take your first step toward a safe future. This holiday season, when you open up a qualified account, you'll receive 10 one-ounce commemorative silver holiday coins. Visit Noble Gold today.
Past performance may not be indicative of future results. Investing in precious metals, including gold, involves risks. Consult with your tax attorney or financial professional before making an investment decision.
The Devil's Advocate. I'm Jason Horton.
I'm Rebecca Lieb.
And this is Ghost Town.
We've all heard the phrase, the devil made me do it, and maybe even watched the Conjuring movies, culminating in the 2021 film called, creatively, The Conjuring, The Devil Made Me Do It. But in my humble opinion, this phrase is even richer than most people think. There's a fascinating case tied to this ominous phrase, and in my humble opinion, the real story of Arne Cheyenne Johnson and his connection to demonology is much more complex, darker, and fraught than any film or phrase portrays. A historical event culminating in an extremely strange murder trial that still lives in our country's collective memory. Still following me after all those adjectives? Today on Ghost Town, the real story of the Devil Made Me Do It case, the murder trial of Arne Cheyenne Johnson. The case really begins on July 3rd, 1980, when 19-year-old Arne Cheyenne Johnson and 26-year-old Debbie Glatzel, who were in a relationship, rented a house for a little vacation in the country. They invited Debbie's brother, 11-year-old David Glatzel, to come to the house with them, as the couple lived with David in the Glatzel family home. That night, David woke up screaming about, quote, a man with big black eyes, a thin face with animal features and jagged teeth, pointed ears, horns, and hooves. The black-eyed man then warned David to beware. David claimed the black-eyed man shoved him onto a waterbed that was left behind by a previous tenant. After that night, David began seeing the old man everywhere. The man made him act strangely, speaking in weird voices, screaming obscenities, and lashing out in violence. Back in Connecticut, where Debbie, Arne, and David lived together, things only got worse. David was nervous and had nightmares of the black-eyed man coming to steal his soul. Odd scratches and bruises began to appear on David, and soon David began to see the black-eyed man while he was awake, claiming that the man would appear as, quote, old with a white beard, dressed in a flannel shirt and jeans. With nowhere else to go, the Glatzel family, including David's mother, Judy Glatzel, turned to the church. A priest came to their home and blessed it, but it only made David's dreams and daytime visions worse. David began to hiss at his family and quote Paradise Lost, a book that, likely, the 11-year-old was not familiar with. Concerned her son was actually possessed, Judy Glatzel called in the Warrens, the iconic paranormal investigative couple that Glatzel had seen during a lecture that she went to on ghosts. The Warrens took the short trip from Monroe to Brookfield, Connecticut, so that Ed could speak with David. As the ex-cop turned demonologist questioned the boy, Lorraine observed the scene. She would later explain what she saw to People magazine. Quote, while Ed interviewed the boy, I saw a black, misty form next to him, which told me we were dealing with something of a negative nature. Soon the child was complaining that invisible hands were choking him, and there were red marks on him. He said that he had the feeling of being hit. It became clear, after that event, that the Warrens definitely thought David was possessed. Not with one, not with two, not with three, but with 43 demons. In October 1980, the Warrens contacted Brookfield police to warn them that the situation was becoming dangerous and even spreading. According to eyewitness testimony, Arne Johnson coerced one of the demons, purportedly in David and showing himself, to possess him while participating in David's exorcisms. A few days later, Arne was purportedly attacked by one of the demons, which allegedly took control of his car and forced it to crash into a tree. Though Arne was thankfully unharmed in the accident, he would be possessed one more time before him and Debbie decided it was time to move out of her parents' house and get away from the situation. Debbie was hired by a man named Alan Bono, a new resident himself in Brookfield, Connecticut, as a dog groomer for his dog grooming company. Debbie and Arne began renting an apartment close to her place of employment. But after the two moved in and Debbie started working her job, Arne started to exhibit odd behavior that was strikingly similar to David's, causing Debbie to fear that he had become possessed as well. According to Debbie, Arne would fall into a trance-like state, wherein he would growl and hallucinate, but later have absolutely no memory of it. Meanwhile, Debbie and Alan Bono became friendly, and it seemed like a good, healthy situation, especially given Debbie's family life. That is, until February 16, 1981. On that day, the couple was hanging out at the dog groomers with Alan, a normal occurrence for the couple, along with Arne's sister Wanda and Debbie's 9-year-old cousin Mary. Alan bought the group lunch at a local bar, and then the drinking began. Debbie then took the girls on a quick errand but returned quickly, anticipating her boss's drinking would lead to trouble. When they returned, Alan became agitated that the woman had left at all, and he seized Debbie's 9-year-old cousin and would not let her go. Eventually, Mary sprung free from Alan's grasp and ran away, but Arne Johnson and Alan Bono started to fight because of it. All of a sudden, Arne began growling like an animal, and then took a 5-inch pocket knife out of his coat and began stabbing Alan Bono in the chest before he ran out the door. After Debbie called the paramedics, Bono died several hours later. Arne Johnson was discovered 2 miles from the site of the killing with absolutely no recollection of what he had just done. During his arrest, Arne Johnson would tell police, quote, "I think I hurt someone," and, quote, "I need help because I've got a drinking problem." When Arne Johnson was informed at police headquarters that Bono had in fact passed away, he became incoherent and then abruptly fell asleep for around 20 minutes. The killing of Alan Bono was the first homicide in Brookfield's then 193-year-old history. Quote, "It was not an unusual crime," Brookfield Police Chief John Anderson told the Washington Post in the fall of 1981. "Somebody got angry, an argument resulted." What was unusual was the media frenzy that followed. Quote, "We couldn't have a simple, uncomplicated murder. Oh no," Anderson went on to say. Instead, everyone in the whole world converged on Brookfield. And boy, did they, because it gets much crazier after this break.
Hi, hello, how are you?
Hello, hello.
How you doing out there?
How's it going?
We are checking in.
This is your check-in.
We hope you're doing well. We want to talk to you about something.
Yeah, can you sit down for a second?
Yeah.
This is serious.
No, I don't care if you're on a treadmill. Press stop.
Yeah, don't get your steps in.
If you're driving,
pull over.
Pull over. Nah, you don't have to do any of those things.
No,
it's really not that big of a deal.
It's really not.
But by, and we'll have it sorted out by the end of the month, but we're going to be changing the Patreon and streamlining it more and organizing it a little bit different. Changing up the tiers and stuff like that. So if you are a patron or want to check it out, we're making it all nice and simple. And probably the breaks in the middle will change as well. week for week, it could be different because sometimes if you know, the spirits compel us, we'll talk about anything. But generally speaking, we're just going to be kind of truncating a lot of stuff and kind of streamlining. That's the word
we use
in this corporation. You love corporate talk, right?
Yeah, you love it.
We're going to circle back around.
Synergy happening here.
Synergy, vertical strategies.
Exactly. We're going to get in alignment with our goals.
So you might notice by the end of the month that changing, and we'll take care of all the business.
Yeah. And it's really in an effort to bring you more content, honestly.
More easier, simpler content. That's what we're hoping for.
Yeah.
And, you know, we've been, you know, kind of doing things somewhat the same way, a lot of evolution, but mainly the same way for a bit. And we've just kind of been reevaluating. And this has nothing to do with the actual episodes, though.
Yeah. The episodes will be the same and we'll be better because more of our efforts will go towards making them better.
Yes. If you go to patreon.com/ghosttownpod, you will see all of that. Mm-hmm. With that said, we want to shout out the government. We got no choice but to shout out our government, who has been our rock and been super supportive. Anyone who is a patron, whether you know you're just if you're a free listener or a paid listener, we appreciate it. Or if you're just listening in general, we appreciate it.
Absolutely.
But we want to shout out these mayors. And it's in no particular order, or drive yourself crazy thinking, is there a particular order? And get really insecure about it, like I would do.
It's your choice.
But these are in no particular order. The mayors, we're just reading the names. That's where we're at right
Keeping
now.
Keeping it simple. Classic.
Keeping it simple. Kelly Meehan.
Hello.
Kat Jozell.
Hello.
Ashley Mattson.
Hello.
Marissa Rothermel.
Hello.
Chris Hernandez.
Hello.
And our governor. We've said, I believe we've said all we could say about our governor. I think we've painted a very clear picture of our governor. We've created, I mean, we've created a
whole
universe.
Life, a whole identity.
Yeah. Didn't ask for it?
No, she did. Certainly, she specifically did not ask for it.
As for it. The opposite of that. No one here, I don't think, is like asking for attention, which I'm surprised. I'd be like, listen, I'm a patron. Give me attention. But none of these people, they are doing it for love and support of the podcast, and we all appreciate it. But our governor,
Avian Noble.
So it might change, but I'll say it one more time. If you want no ads, chit chat, 7 days free. Bonus episodes, head on over to patreon.com/ghosttown.
It'll be there for you. It'll be there for you.
It will be there for you.
Just looking a little bit different. Let's get back into it. The day after the killing of Alan Bono by Arne Cheyenne Johnson, Lorraine Warren informed the Brookfield police that Johnson was in fact possessed when the crime was committed. Media had a field day, particularly fueled by the Warrens, who continued to feed public curiosity and promised that lectures, a book, and a movie were in the works. Arne hired lawyer Martin Minella, who received calls from all over the world about what was being called, quote, the demon murder trial. Minella even traveled to England to meet with lawyers who had been involved in two similar cases, though neither went to trial. It was all building to a very unique defense, one that would be made known on October 28th, 1981. That day, the trial began in Connecticut's Superior Court. Minella attempted to submit a plea of not guilty by virtue of possession, putting the case into a global spotlight with a truly bonkers defense, that Johnson didn't kill 40-year-old Alan Bono that chilly day. The devil did. Considering the reams of physical evidence against his client and the stiff sentence that he faced if found guilty, Minella may have determined that blaming Satan for the stabbing was perhaps worth the risk. Quote, I could put the Pope on, and he'd tell you that if a guy is demonically possessed, he is not responsible, Minella told the Post. He planned to bring in exorcism specialists from Europe and threatened to subpoena the priests who oversaw David Glatzel's exorcisms if they did not cooperate with the defense. Minella argued that demonic possession absolutely caused Arne Johnson to kill Bono, a defense that showed Johnson's innate lack of intent. And of course, Arne Johnson continued to claim that he completely blacked out and did not remember stabbing anyone at all. So, perfect. Minella couldn't take full credit for the idea of blaming Satan for the death of Alan Bono. Of course, the Warrens had a lot to do with Minella's defense strategy. Quote, everybody asks, how could you come up with a defense like this? I didn't come up with this, Minella told the Washington Post. This is what was presented to me. I went to see Ed and Lorraine, and I decided to take the case after talking to them. They told me that when you're possessed, you have no control over your actions. Quote, this was a mind-blowing defense on Marty's part. The sometimes controversial, always iconic, Connecticut trial lawyer Norm Pattis said in an interview, with not a small degree of admiration. But, quote, I don't know. If I'd have paid good money for the defense and my lawyer got up and said the devil made him do it, I'd be thinking, that's not the only thing the devil did. He made me pay you good money, too. Give me my money back. The presiding judge, Robert Callahan, wasn't having any of it. Callahan argued that no such defense could even exist in a court of law due to lack of evidence and that it would be, quote, irrelative and unscientific to allow related testimony. With a creative demonic possession defense thrown out the window, Minella and Arne Johnson went with something a bit more typical, self-defense. After all, an intoxicated Alan Bono had taken a 9-year-old cousin and refused to let her go. All the same, Minella hadn't planned on using that defense, and in trial it showed. The jury deliberated for about 17 hours over 3 days, finding Arne Johnson guilty of first-degree manslaughter, giving him a 10 to 20-year prison sentence, though he only ended up serving 5 years. Arne and Debbie married after he was released and are still together today. The Warrens, who admitted before the trial that the case would be good for their business as, quote, demonologists, knew they had something as soon as they heard of the initial possession. Quote, I felt like a good fisherman when he knows there's something on the line, Ed Warren really told the Washington Post in 1981. Of course, he was right. It led to lots of great PR for the paranormal couple, including a made-for-TV movie called The Demon Murder Case, starring Kevin Bacon and Andy Griffith, and a book called The Devil in Connecticut. Of course, there's also The Conjuring series, based on the life's work of the Warrens, culminating in the 2021 movie The Conjuring, The Devil Made Me Do It, starring Patrick Wilson and Vera Farmiga in a storyline very similar to that of Arne Johnson. Now, as you likely know, this isn't the first time our culture has heard the phrase, quote, the devil made me do it, which was actually popularized in the 1970s from a catchphrase by comedian Flip Wilson. Then it was a humorous expression used to shift blame or excuse one's actions after doing something wrong or impulsive. Now? Well, the devil made me do it has taken on a much more haunting tone, one that, thanks to the Warrens, The Conjuring, and our love of paranormal horror, is not easily forgotten.
Holidays mean feasting. From cheddar biscuits to French toast bakes, Hero Bread has you covered with 0 to 5 grams net carb and high fiber options to ensure your holidays stay delicious and balanced. Like their 3 grams net carb pan au chocolat. Hero Bread is offering 10% off your order. Go to hero.co and use code FALL25 at checkout. That's FALL25 at HERO.CO. All figures are per serving of Hero Bread. Contains up to 17 grams of fat per serving. See the product nutrition panels on hero.co for more information.